Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Melissa in the Morning spends a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. Thank you so much for being here this morning. How are you?
I am well. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I think we have to kind of dive into what I believe is the biggest conversation in America this morning, which is Roe v. Wade and the potential of it being overturned by the Supreme Court. We know just at the beginning of the week, I had some of your comments and how displeased you were with the idea of this being a potential reality. Could you speak on it a little bit, your initial thoughts?
My feelings are with the countless women across America who are fearful, angry, anguished about the prospect of losing this fundamental right that has been established for 50 years in this country. I'm aghast at the opinion, not only for its holding, but its dismissive disregard for precedent, which the last three nominees pledged, they promised under oath to respect. Roe v. Wade has been the law of the land for five decades, and millions of women have relied on it for health care, which is a fundamental right. And I'm going to do everything I can to fight to retain it in legislation that would codify or incorporate Roe v. Wade into federal statutes. We're going to be hopefully voting on that bill, the Women's Health Protection Act, which I wrote next week. And I hope that my colleagues will pass it. But regardless of the outcome next week, we're going to continue the fight to guarantee that women have choices about when and whether they become pregnant. That's the fundamental right that is part of privacy guarantees in the Constitution. And this kind of sweeping opinion, if it's issued, would change the legal landscape in this country fundamentally and enduringly.
And I know that you are urging Governor Lamont to put as many safeguards in place for patients and for doctors, which I know Connecticut is in the process of. So here in Connecticut, would you agree, Senator Blumenthal, that whether Roe v. Wade stays or goes, Connecticut is in a pretty safe position considering the governor has already signaled he plans to put those protections in place?
The protections that the governor hopefully will sign soon would protect Connecticut women, and it would also protect patients, women, and providers, the healthcare professionals who come to Connecticut. But that statute is only a state statute. It could be changed. We are much safer in guaranteeing this right than most other states in the country. I'm very proud of Connecticut for moving forward, as the legislature did overwhelmingly in the last week or so. And I do hope the governor will protect and enforce this law. I think he will. He certainly indicated he would. And I've told my colleagues as recently as this week publicly in Washington, D.C., that more states should take Connecticut's statute as a model in our federal laws. We should take it as a outline of where we should go.
We're talking this morning to Senator Blumenthal, the Roe v. Wade story, I think, is what everybody's really thinking about. And, you know, understandably, this is a really tough subject for people because there are especially those who really feel strongly about never allowing an abortion in any circumstance for usually it's religious reasons. But then there are people who feel on the other side, listen, it's my body. You have no idea what we, the women, go through. We should have that right to make that decision. You know, and I think in some regards, Senator Blumenthal, as I'm kind of talking out loud to you, I think there's too many extremes with abortion. If you were to ask my opinion of it, I think if there's a good compromise, I think that abortion in a lot of cases is, you know, necessary. And you talk about things like rape, incest, human trafficking, situations that in the past gave justification to get an abortion. Here's my question, though. That becomes very confusing about Roe v. Wade. You know, we have states like Florida, for example, that have already banned abortion. They just signed that into law not long ago. You know, other states that have done it. I'm curious sort of the strength of Roe v. Wade, because if we already have states banning abortion, essentially, and kind of writing off things like Planned Parenthood out of their budgets, I'm wondering sort of this, the real significance here, if you could speak to that.
First, to take your really important point, abortion should be a matter of individual choice, personal decision involving the woman whose body it is and whoever she wants to consult, her clergy, her faith advisor, her family, her friends. That decision ought to be hers. Those state statutes that you mentioned, like Florida, Texas, Mississippi, which either place incredibly heavy burdens on women seeking an abortion, like doing it within 8 weeks of conception, which is unrealistic for a lot of women. They may not even know they're pregnant, is a violation of Roe v. Wade. If Roe is struck down, those statutes in 23 states now that in effect ban abortion after only a matter of weeks would prevail. They would be law until Roe is a matter of Supreme Court decision. And remember, this opinion is only a draft. It was made public by a leak, but it's only a draft. The law of the land is Roe, and we're going to continue to fight to uphold it. But I think you hit the key point, which is women ought to be making these decisions about when and whether they become pregnant, especially if there's rape, incest, and so forth, which would be banned under many of those statutes.
I'm curious, Senator Blumenthal, as I mentioned, I think what's really what can be confusing about Roe v. Wade versus what states are deciding. Like you said, if Roe v. Wade goes away, I know a new news analysis from NBC, for example, found data that 23 states would institute bans, which is what you're saying. What I think is confusing is what is right now, what is the timeline, the length of time you can go legally before you get an abortion?
Well, it may vary according to state statute, but the Supreme Court has said that states cannot place an undue burden on these rights. And so there are the 23 states that would have laws so restrictive they could practically be interpreted as banning abortion. Then there are other states that will move to restrict it in some way. Those 23 states now have laws on the books, or so-called trigger laws, that go into effect if Roe is overruled or reversed. So it's a developing area, and the uncertainty itself is really painful for a lot of people, a lot of women, who simply may not know what their rights are. And that uncertainty creates even more apprehension and anguish. So I hope the Supreme Court will clarify as quickly as possible
but
exactly what it's going to do. But remember also, these justices said they would respect precedent, and now they're violating that promise.
Essentially, why I was asking that question, Senator Blumenthal, and I think you kind of answered it, is so can you basically get an abortion up until you give birth right now under Roe v. Wade?
There are restrictions based on health and other factors.
But yes,
that logically could be placed as a matter of medical practice and health and safety.
But essentially, depending on your situation, that could fall under acceptable.
Depends on the law of the state, Alyssa.
Okay. Because I think.
And it also depends on what is done in Roe v. Wade.
Okay. Because maybe it's a matter of just compromise. maybe it's a matter of looking at something that could be seen as archaic and seeing if we can adjust it and find a middle ground. Because I think it's becoming political.
I'm very proud of Connecticut for moving forward and trying to fill the void and answer some of these questions as a practical matter. And we need to work to preserve these fundamental rights of privacy to make sure that women have decision-making control.
No question. I agree. Well, Senator Blumenthal, I appreciate your time this morning.
Great to talk.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk again next week.
Many Medicare Advantage plans have been delaying or denying coverage to beneficiaries for services, health care services, even though those requests meet Medicare coverage rules.
This was just a snippet from an interview I did earlier this week with Max Richmond, who frequently comes on the show. He's with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And recently, the Inspector General came out with a report really looking at Medicare Advantage plans. And that's what Max was talking about, the not so great side to Medicare Advantage plans. And as you can imagine, many of you were outraged at hearing that because hundreds, thousands of you are on Medicare Advantage plans. And you thought, where is this coming from? Why am I not understanding where this guy is, what he's saying? So I wanted to get the other side of it. I wanted to talk about the reaction to the Inspector General's report. If, in fact, maybe local agents here agree with it or any part of it. So on the show this morning, I welcome Bob Vontel, who has his own agency, the Vontel Agency, which is in Stratford, Connecticut. He's been working with Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans for quite some time. Bob, welcome to the show. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa.
So, Bob, what was your initial reaction to the Inspector General's report?
Well, frankly, I was a little shocked because a couple of years, well, in 2017, Medicare performed 43 million tests, and they took a sample of 250 tests and then came up with a conclusion based on that. And it's such a small sample of testing that, you know, to come up with any conclusions about anything like that just seems pretty far-fetched.
What were those tests? They were looking to see if, like, the claims that were being made, the denials, is like, what were the tests for? What were they looking at?
Well, they were looking at, you know, whether tests were denied or payments weren't made. And then at the end of the Inspector General's report, basically they said that for the most part, most of the tests were approved and were paid. So, you know, it's kind of like, what's the problem, you know?
Well, that is kind of my question then. What's the problem? Why even release something like this? Or I'll even go a step further. The National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, they said they've been sounding the alarm on these Advantage plans for years. And I guess I'm confused. Why?
Well, I don't know why, because, Medicare Advantage plans have been around since the 1990s. So, you know, they've been around for over 30 years. Almost 50% of the people that have Medicare supplemental plans or Medicare Advantage plans have Medicare Advantage plans. And they expect that within the next 5 to 10 years, more than 50% of the people that have additional coverage past just Medicare will have Medicare Advantage plans.
Bob Vontel, I'm curious, how many of your clients are on Medicare Advantage plans?
I would say the majority of them, somewhere around 85%.
So how many is that for people who aren't familiar with how many people you serve?
Well, I serve roughly 2,000 people. So I would say, you know, a couple hundred people out of that population have Medicare supplemental plans and the rest have Medicare Advantage plans.
Okay. The reason I ask you that is not to pop quiz you, but to just show that you clearly know a thing or two about Medicare Advantage plans. That's fair to say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been doing it for 41 years. So
there you go. Okay. So the reason I ask you this, Bob, is because, you know, when in speaking about this earlier this week, some of the things that were brought up about Advantage plans is that you have a lack of amount of doctors you can access through the Advantage plans. There are not as many benefits as being advertised, and it's very difficult to go back to an original plan, just a Medicare or maybe another supplement plan, if you're in an Advantage plan, unless it's during an open enrollment. Is there any truth to any of the things I just mentioned, or can you clarify maybe some of the things that were said?
Yeah, well, you know, basically, I mean, just like in any industry, there are some companies that have a lot of doctors, and there's other companies that don't have as many. But if somebody was going to buy a Medicare Advantage plan, I mean, they should be looking at what's called PPO plans. And PPO plans are, that's an acronym for preferred provider option plans, where you could be inside of a large national network. And then you can also go to doctors who participate in Medicare but don't participate in that particular plan. So, you know, with a national PPO plan, you know, you really have the same access to the same number of doctors that anybody would have under traditional Medicare.
Interesting. And you would probably find that out well before you are applying for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why people are looking at Medicare Advantage plans so much is that, you know, most of the plans that I represent are actually a zero premium plan. They estimated that the average cost for a Medicare Advantage plan is like is $38 a month. The average cost for a Medicare Plan G plan in Connecticut is somewhere between $250 to $300 a month, including a prescription drug card. So, you know, there's no different. I mean, there's no, you know, there's a significant difference in cost. And that's a significant difference to the beneficiaries that are getting their health insurance through Medicare.
So the Inspector General highlighted recently pre-authorization and coverage denials in Medicare Advantage plans, arguing the report and some press coverage of the report create a false impression of these Advantage plans' performance. And to talk a little bit about this morning is Bob Vontel. He has his own agency, Vontel Agency, in Stratford. Bob, forgive me. I know I have a father who's a health insurance broker. I have a husband who's also a broker. My brother, the whole nine yards. But right. I got to be honest, me and like most of the world have absolutely no clue what you guys are talking about half the time. So, you know, when you were talking about PPO plans and things like that, I did get a little bit lost. So kind of dumb it down for me and my listeners a little bit. You know, when we talk about these Medicare Advantage plans and the fact that the Inspector General's report is saying things like you don't get as many doctors in your network, you have less benefits than are being advertised to you, and it's way harder for you to go back to an original plan once you're in Advantage plans. Could you address that again? Do you mind doing that?
No, not at all. Yeah, so one of the issues, and I'll go to the last issue you brought up about switching back to traditional Medicare.
Sure, yeah.
That's a total fallacy, particularly here in Connecticut. Connecticut is one of three states in the country that's considered to be a guaranteed issue state. So you can switch any time during the year from a Medicare Advantage plan to a traditional Medicare supplemental plan. The only catch has been that the prescription drug coverage, the only opening for that is January 1st every year. So if you switch in the middle of the year for your Medicare from a Medicare Advantage plan to a supplemental plan, you may not have prescriptions until January 1st when you have open enrollment again.
Okay, so only your medications, if you're not in an open enrollment period, that's the only thing that could be in jeopardy is the coverage of your medications?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in Connecticut's guaranteed issue, which means there's no pre-existing conditions, there's no elimination riders, there's no extra premium, there's no waiting periods.
Okay. So the idea that you have to wait for an open enrollment period, it's not as difficult as it was made out to be earlier.
Well, it's truly not difficult at all.
Right. Okay. So that's okay. Just wanted to clarify that. And then as far as having doctors in network, getting benefits like, for example, I'm trying to think of what I was talking about earlier this week, you know, hearing, things like that. I'm drawing kind of a blank, but, you know, talking about the benefits, because I know this report really looked at the fact that it just it felt a lot like, hey, you're being told this is so great when really it's not so great. And I kind of draw back to that original question, which we started off this conversation with, which is why? Like, what would be the purpose of knocking the Advantage plans? I'm just trying to understand why that would even be knocked in the first place.
Yeah, I don't really understand why it would be knocked either. You know, one of the things is that something that actually is incredibly true is that you pick up what's called extra benefits with Medicare Advantage plans. So generally you get some kind of dental insurance coverage, you get some kind of eyeglass coverage, you get some kind of hearing aid coverage, prescriptions are part of your plan, and now... You know, now more and more they're adding on other benefits. Like one of the things they're adding on now is non-emergency transportation to the doctors. So for people that have a problem getting a family member or getting a ride to a doctor, you know, they now have additional benefits where you get a certain number of visits per year where somebody will pick you up and bring you to the doctor and then bring you home. And you obviously don't get that under a traditional Medicare plan, you know?
Right, right. It's just interesting. I really can't wrap my mind, because even the idea of just such polarizing ideas to Advantage plans, I just don't even understand, I guess, why the report came out. Based on what you're telling me, I don't understand why the report even came out or how there was enough data to support what was said in this.
Well, and what's even more startling is just recently J.D. Power Associates did a survey of people that had Medicare Advantage plans, and 9 out of 10 people were very satisfied with their Medicare Advantage plans. Another organization did a study of people that switched from Medicare supplemental plans to Medicare Advantage plans, and the majority of them felt that they were better off with a Medicare Advantage plan. And 2% said that they thought the traditional supplemental plan was better. So, I mean, the evidence isn't necessarily in 250, claims. It's in years and years of this business being in existence and happy clients.
Mm. It's really interesting information. Bob Vontel, with Vontel Agency in Stratford, we really appreciate you weighing in on this, giving us your professional perspective on this, and clearing up some of the questions that I know I had, and some of our listeners were a little taken aback by earlier this week. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate your time. Again, that's Bob Vontel right here on WICC.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Look out for Mr. Stork, that persevering chap, to come along and drop a bundle in your lap. You may be poor or rich, it doesn't matter which. Millionaires, they get theirs like the butcher and the baker. So look out for Mr. Stork.
Does anyone remember this opening scene in Dumbo when you see all the storks delivering the baby animals to the circus animals? It's so precious. And of course, a couple days later, we meet Dumbo the elephant. This story this morning, this coverage this morning, talking about the moms at the zoo, just reminds me of all the baby animals that come in at the very beginning of Dumbo and how precious that scene is. And joining me this morning is Greg Dancho. Now, I know, Greg, there are no storks delivering the babies to the Beardsley Zoo, but there are a lot of babies on property. And it's because we got some great mama animals there on property. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, we do have red crown cranes here, which
there you go.
Which are about the same size as a stork. and actually, I think we talked about this. We have two of them there now, and McDuffie and the female we brought in from the Bronx Zoo. They're actually doing courtship dancing right now. So as we're talking about potential mothers, We do have a potential mother there where they actually would dance. And so if you go by the crane yard over by the red pandas, you can sometimes see them hopping around, and you wonder maybe they stepped on something hot or they're just or just dancing. But they're actually dancing in courtship. So we're keeping our
sweet.
Eyes close there that we may. So they may not be bringing babies in, but maybe they'll be doing something where we'll have some eggs. So that'd be really nice.
That is so exciting.
But yeah, but we do. Oh, it'd be very, very exciting. But we do have mothers here, and we do have Chiang Mai, who we know had Rika and Zaya, who have now gone on to hopefully become mothers of their own. This is, again, part of the SSP program. We don't have any babies born. We talked about it before. No babies are born here at the zoo unless it's really part of a program for the ongoing success of the species. So that we're excited about Rika and Zaya. We're hoping to have word from the zoos that they're at right now. When Rika is now at St. Louis Zoo being introduced to a male, and we're kind of hoping to get to see that she becomes a mother soon. We know that we had Ethel had her baby piglets just recently. Moo Moo Rose is here. Her mom is Brighty in the cow and the Dexter cows. And I guess the one babies that we did have born this year that this year was Tana having baby Chili, you know, and
baby
people go
Chili.
By now and they run it. Baby Chili, little baby Chili in here. You go by the habitat now, and people go, "Where's the baby?" Because you always say we just had a baby,
right?
And it's she's a little 8 months old now, and you hard could tell that she is a baby anymore. That's how big she's grown.
Mm-hmm.
They really grow very fast, and the wild animals grow fast because if they stay small for too long, then there's potential of a predator coming along.
Mm-hmm.
So really, babies in the wild, they move. But Chili still gets on top of Panda and rides her.
Which is the cutest.
The baby,
I love that.
Which is, I feel bad for Panda as a mother. You know, again, we talk about
she's like,
stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's enough. It's enough's enough, man. You're time for you to start walking here.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Yeah, we're really excited. One of the most exciting things that's going to be coming up shortly for us is Pip in the ocelot in the rainforest building. We don't have a male that is available for her to come in for having kittens. So we're going to be doing AI again here at the zoo, which is artificial insemination.
We're
bringing in a reproductive biologist who's going to be coming in from another facility, and we're going to hopefully have her become a mother with artificial insemination. So again, as part of the SSP programs and trying to, you know, have babies and keep the animals alive on the planet, this is one of the procedures that we can use with Kuma, who was our ocelot before. People maybe remember our three-legged ocelot. She had artificial insemination twice and had kittens twice. And
that's
those kids
amazing.
Went on to become mothers of their own.
Wow.
And that was the first time in the world it happened. And she, as a mother, you know, unbelievable mother when she had those kittens. In fact, when we tried to get those kittens away just for their medical examinations, she would not be happy at all. So again, just a great, great mother.
Yeah.
We're hoping for otters. And it's interesting when you look at things in the world of and having the babies and mothers. The otters actually said Jintehu are showing some amorous activities. So we're keeping our fingers crossed there.
You have such great words, by the way, Greg. You are the definition of family-friendly radio because you have fantastic words for the thing you're dancing around every time you wanted to say.
We do.
You're very good at it. I just have to tell you that. Go on. I'm sorry. I just wanted to let you know. I've noticed that. You're very good at it. You're very good at it. Sorry. Continue.
Well, we do. They have what's called delayed implantation, which means that they can get together and the baby, even though it's a 3 month gestation, the baby can stay inside mom before it actually starts working in there for 12 months.
Oh my gosh, that's wild!
Mom can carry an embryo for up to 12 months before they give birth, and that's usually because of timing for weather. I think one of the coolest things that we have here, especially with moms, and I guess for moms, is that in our GLTs, our golden lion tamarins, they will have babies and usually twins, and we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed for them here at the zoo. But when they have the babies, the mom, you know, has the offspring. She makes sure they're good, gives them a feeding, and then what she does is she passes them off to the dad. She passes them off to the male.
That's so precious.
And the male will then carry them. The male holds on. Male takes all responsibility
wow.
for the babies.
That's
and
amazing.
I think as a mother, and mother, on Mother's Day, I think that is a really good day.
That's a nice break for Mama.
Isn't
yes.
that nice? Yeah, Mom. All Mom does is get them back for feeding, and then pass them right back to Dad again.
Wow.
And he'll carry them again, just like the anteater. He'll carry them until they really shouldn't be carried anymore, and then they'll finally go off. But that's in the animal world. That's kind of a really interesting thing.
Yeah,
that,
because don't like the penguins. The male penguins are usually the ones keeping the egg worms. Well,
and
the
eggs, right?
Yeah.
Right. All, yep. And also, and the opposite side of the coin, in hornbills, which we don't have here at the zoo, but hornbills will actually have the female will go into a nest cavity in a tree,
mm-hmm.
and then the male will mutter in there. We'll literally seal her into the tree and leave just a little hole in the tree that she can stick a beak out so we can give her food.
Oh
and
my
she
gosh.
Stays in there until the babies are hatched.
Wow.
And they're big enough to where they're protected. So the animal world, as moms, some really interesting stuff out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing, Greg. Wow. I learned so much, and I love the fact that there are so many mamas on property. I love that. Go Mama, mm-hmm. right ahead of Mother's Day.
Go Mama. Yeah. And we're going to be hopefully, we'll see as we go down the line what we have coming. So, again, this is, again, part of the SSB program and part of what we do here, again, for conservation of these most precious animals we have on the earth.
Well, we thank you for all the work that you and everyone at the zoo does, Greg Dancho, and we thank you for popping on the show to share it all.
All right. Well, happy Mother's Day to you, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there today.
Thank you. And to your wife as well. Yes, to your beautiful wife as well.
You.
Happy Mother's Day. Thanks, Greg.
Okay. Do take care.
Thanks. You too.